like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animal, talking animal, talking animal. Must be an animal. Come hear the animals. Talking animals. Talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guest today is Thomas Ponce, the founder and president of Lobby for Animals. Lobby for Animals has been spreading its message about the importance of lobbying for animal welfare and environmental issues, and teaching people how to lobby effectively since Ponce launched it more than 3 years ago. This may be a good time to mention that Thomas Ponce is 15 years old. That fact might be a little hard to reconcile with the work he's done and is doing, as well as the recognition he's received from national organizations. For instance, the Lobby for Animals website features training videos that offer step-by-step instructions on how to be an effective lobbyist, contacts for government representatives, templates of sample letters to legislators, and more. Ponce wears important hats for other organizations and has been recognized for his work by such national institutions as PETA, and FARM, that's the Farm Animal Rights Movement. We'll hear more of this young man's story, delve into the work he does, and some issues that particularly interest him at the moment when I speak with Thomas Ponce in a moment here on Talking Animals. Later, I'll speak briefly with Alex Blount, who's been visiting schools and now summer camps to deliver presentations about elephants and circuses and other performing settings. Joined by Ellie, a nearly full-size robotic elephant. They'll be in St. Petersburg on Friday and elsewhere in Florida in the coming days. Lastly, a programming note, but not about this program. Later today at 12:15 p.m. on WMNF, The Fairness Doctrine, the ongoing debate segment produced and moderated by Jennifer Sullivan, will address the topic, eating meat. Is it right? That's today on 88.5 FM at 12:15 p.m. Right now, though, let's meet Thomas with a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj at wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Thomas Ponce to Talking Animals. Good morning, Thomas.
Morning, Duncan.
Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals today.
Thank you for having me here.
You bet. So I'm eager to hear all about Lobby for Animals, and of course we'll do that in a moment or two. But first I'd like to ask you, what was the very first thing about an animal, positive or negative, that really affected you?
Well, it was mostly when I realized where my food came from that kind of got me into animal rights, got me into my whole philosophy.
Sure. How did you make that realization? What was the circumstance?
Well, I, again, like I've always said, you know, I've always been interested in animals, and as soon as I, like I said, learned where my food came from, it kind of, I said, well, you know, this isn't right, this isn't just, and again, this all came from me wanting to learn more information about them, learning as much as I could, doing as much as I can, and, you know, as soon as I got that information, I decided to become vegetarian, and then as I got older, learned more information, I decided to become vegan.
And then how did you, as you kind of traveled that path, how did you start going from thinking about it and making changes in your diet and lifestyle, et cetera, to actually working on behalf of animals? What in particular was the inspiration for that step?
I mean, like I said, I mean, I said to myself, you know, this isn't right. I want to change this. And I saw what I wanted to change. I knew that I wanted to change it. And I decided that it was time to start working.
What was your first bit of work in that way once you said, okay, well, this is action that I feel like I need to take. What was your first step in that regard?
Well, I started joining different organizations. I started attending protests. I started signing petitions. But actually, one of the earliest things I did was I created a dog wash over at the apartment complex here, and essentially to raise money for a rescue shelter that was nearby. And we raised a good portion of money, and obviously we donated to the rescue shelter. That was like one of the first things that I'd done that had actually been kind of hands-on.
And it sounds like it was effective.
It was the first kind of big project that I had done at the time.
Now, there are countless, I think it's safe to say, animal activists and advocates who've been working for years to improve various conditions for animals, many of whom eventually come to the conclusion that the most effective way to really affect change is through legislation and therefore through lobbying the relevant legislators. When did you first recognize the importance of lobbying?
Well, when I first saw that, that was actually when I went to the National Animal Rights Conference.
And where was that?
When was that?
Where and when, for that matter, sure.
That was in Washington, D.C., and I think that was in 2013. I'm pretty sure the date might be off by a year.
Right, I gotcha.
But at the conference, I met a lawyer, and she told me about lobbying, she told me about legislation. It sparked my interest, because for a long period of time, I felt like I hadn't been doing much, because again, I mean, you can attend protests, you can sign petitions, but that's pretty much all I was figuring that we could do. And then once I heard about lobbying, I was like, well, this is how I'm going to do more. This is how I'm able to, you know, change what I want to see, do what I want to, create the change that I want to see.
What's interesting to me about that, and well, there's a number of things, but the fact that you had this conversation with that lawyer at the Animal Rights Conference in Washington, D.C., but still, that there's any number of things that you could have done or continue to do to help animals or to work on their behalf. But it seems interesting to me that just, I guess, in light of that conversation, you said, you know what, you know, lobbying is the path for me. And is that...
Oh, yeah. No, because it absolutely is. I mean, if we want to actually change what, you know, the cruelty that we see, if we want to change the problems in this world, they all lie at the laws, you know. If we... Again, like I said, you can protest all you want, you can sign petitions, but if you really want to actually make the change, you need to strike at the laws. And I mean, that's the conclusion I came to, so when I came home from the conference, I created the domain Lobby for Animals, and then have been essentially just working on it ever since.
It's really interesting because, again, you know, as I kind of mentioned a moment ago, a lot of people that have been very concerned about animals and animal welfare and working on their behalf for a lot of years came to the same realization you did, but it took them, I think, and I include myself in this, a lot more years than it took you, because really, as you find, the more you delve into this world, yeah, legislation either is weak in certain areas or doesn't exist in certain areas, or there are laws that are so flimsy or difficult to enforce that they might as well not exist. And yeah, really the only way that you can ultimately make a change that's really effective for protecting animals in a whole slew of issues is by legislation. So let folks know, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you just tuned in, my guest is Thomas Ponce, a 15-year-old activist and founder of Lobby for Animals, which emphasizes the importance of lobbying for animal welfare and environmental issues, and teaches people how to lobby effectively. If you'd like to ask Thomas a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663, email dj@wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. Okay, so you have the idea, you have the domain. Describe for me from there the process of actually creating Lobby for Animals. Kind of take me through sort of step by step, if you would.
Well, as soon as I got the domain, the thing, I had to host the domain. So I had to actually pay for the ability to have the domain, host the domain. And then the other thing was that I needed to become a nonprofit, because if I needed to trademark the name Lobby for Animals. I needed to trademark, or not the name, but I needed to trademark like the same, the Stream of Change Lobby for it. But I also had to, again, like I said, become a nonprofit. So I filed for the nonprofit status. I actually just recently got it. But actually, the creation of the website itself, I went through a service called Wix, in which it allows you, actually, I'll pull up the site right now. It lets you create your own website, obviously. And it has very simple tools to use. It's very easy. And I got all the information that I had. I got all the information that was available to me. I even found some new information. And just put everything that I knew on the website, everything I knew about lobbying. And then I said, well, I can go a little bit further with this. So I decided to create videos, because, I mean, this is an important thing for people to know. You know, lobbying is it's a crucial step in making change. So that is kind of one of the main things that led me to creating the training videos on my website. Because, I mean, a lot of the problems is like, yeah, well, you know, I see the lobbying as important, but I don't really know how to do it. People may not have the time to take a class or look that up themselves. You know, one of the other things I did to learn more about lobbying is I took a class from the Humane Society that was on the page. And that, like, again, like, people may not have that time, so I figured, okay, well, I'll make these short, like, 16-minute videos talking about, let's say, the importance of lobbying for animal rights or different tips that people can use. You know, the U.S. government, how to call elected officials, why it's important to attend a town meeting. You know, all this information so that people could learn this information, but they wouldn't be just bombarded with facts.
Well, that's the thing. It's very, obviously you intended, it's very accessible. And you're right. I mean, part of what's great about it is that really demystifies the process of lobbying. And as part of that, of course, lobbying can take all shapes and forms. If anybody has any inclination in that way, in that direction, you kind of lay out different ways that they can be effective depending on what they're trying to do and who they're trying to reach and at what level.
The idea is to want to make LFA, you know, your go-to place for pretty much anything lobbying. You know, I want people to, when they want to learn a new piece of information about lobbying, they go to Lobby for Animals. When they want to learn about the different ways to approach a legislator, they go to Lobby for Animals. A place where they can go to get new information, to where they can figure out all the questions, answer all the questions that they have.
Well, that's great, because again, it's not everybody is in a position to go to a conference, for example, like the one that you went to in Washington, D.C., that kind of first maybe galvanized your interest in that way. And people, yeah, they're busy. And again, for a lot of people, at least at first, it's sort of daunting. It's sort of intimidating to think, geez, how could I lobby my local legislator or much less on a larger national level? And yet those questions are addressed on the Lobby for Animals website, which, by the way, we should mention, and we will again, of course, a few more times, is lobbyforanimals.org. So, it's a lot of the things that a lot of people say, well, yeah, I'd like to help out, or I do feel strongly about this issue or that cause, but I don't really know what to do about it.
Other thing is, like, when you were talking about how people feel it's a daunting task to talk to legislators, I've seen this. Like, a lot of people, we view legislators like higher than us. You know, we don't view them as people. And that's the biggest thing. They are people, just like us. I mean, the reason that they are in the position they are in is to listen to us. That's their job. We're their constituents. And when we make the connection that they are people, that's when talking to your legislator becomes simple. Because, I mean, that's essentially all lobbying is, talking to your legislator.
Yeah.
So if we just talk to our legislators, we can essentially break that connection. You know, we can make our voice heard within legislation.
Yeah, and it's so interesting, Thomas. I mean, sort of coincidentally, especially the fact that part of what sent you down this path more specifically was a conference in Washington, D.C. I was just at one this weekend that I've gone to a number of times called Taking Action for Animals, actually put together by the Humane Society. And further coincidentally, one of the things I saw was by a local organization that was one of the sponsors, Big Cat Rescue. And Howard Baskin was talking about lobbying, of course, for a bill in particular that would affect big cats and sort of further protections for them. But he was talking about when he and wife Carol, the founder of Big Cat Rescue, have now been in many, many legislators' offices lobbying for things that would help big cats and give them further protections. But he was citing an example of while they were waiting to go in to see a legislator, in the outer office there was a couple of aides, as there are in any of those offices, and one was talking about, fielded a call, I think, when they sat down, and one was saying to the other, like, that's the 12th call we've gotten on this. This is obviously big. And what Howard's point was that, I mean, 12 calls may or may not seem like a lot. To me, it doesn't seem like that many really on a given issue. But to them and those aides that then have the ear of that legislator, if he or she is going in and saying, hey, you know, we've gotten 12 calls on this big cat rescue, I mean, this big cat issue, this is important. It's amazing how few things it takes, in other words, to get a legislator's attention. And that's what you really want, is to say, this is important. Look how many constituents we've heard from just today. So again, with the guidance they get from the Lobby for Animals website, you have contact information and you have guidance on how to make those calls or send those emails. So at a certain point, there's like really no reason not to, because it takes often a very short period of time, and yet the impact can be tremendous, way more than you might anticipate.
Exactly. And to further, ease the process, I also have on my page a area that's called Find Your Legislator, which has every single state. And then once you, let's say, click the link for, Alabama or for Florida, it would take you to It would take you to a page that would show you the senators in your state, House representatives in your state. So to make the process even more easier for the person using it, so that it's not, well, I had the information, but I don't know who to contact.
That's what I mean. It's there's really no reason not to, because if you're busy at work or at school or whatever you might otherwise be doing, and you have a couple of minutes downtime before your next meeting or work call or conference call or class or whatever it might be, you could go to the Lobby for Animals website, click on that, see who to contact, and send an email right there within a minute or two, and you've helped in an often significant way with a very short amount of time and relatively little effort.
Exactly.
So, Thomas, let's right away, it's impressive that you've managed to score 501c3 nonprofit status, because I think that's, for a lot of organizations, that's its own challenge and hurdle. You overcame that, and you've, of course, got the website up and running and full of great information. What were the biggest challenges you feel like you have faced so far in launching the organization and getting the information there and just getting to the point today where we're discussing it? Were there some tough moments along the way that said, oh, geez, this is kind of a real obstacle here?
The toughest moments, I would say, in creating the organization were just trying to, again, collect the information, the filing of the nonprofit status is kind of hard.
Yeah, no kidding. That's why, again, I mean, there's a lot of people that feel like, oh, this is a huge, difficult thing, and it's very complicated, and usually you need a lawyer or someone to really kind of guide you through, just because it can be thick with sort of protocol and stuff. So, what kind of help did you have on that?
I have an attorney that helped me with the 501c3.
Okay.
Status filing, yeah.
Yeah, thank goodness, because that would have been tricky otherwise. Tell me some instances where, because again, you started this as a 12-year-old, we need to keep in mind, and again, you're 15 now, which is probably also hard to keep in mind as we listen to you talk, but tell me some instances where starting the organization, now looking back just the 3 years, made it harder. Like, for example, did people have some difficulty taking you seriously, like, hey, I want to do this organization and it's all about lobbying, but I'm 12.
I mean, absolutely, because a lot of people saw my age originally, and they just said, "Are you serious? Like, I mean, he's like 12. This person obviously can't be serious." And the difference is, like, once I talked to them, then they realized, okay, he's serious about this. He's very serious about this. I mean, it's one of the biggest challenges, like, looking back now, would probably be the fact that I was, young at the time. I mean, it didn't discourage me at all. It didn't stop
Clearly.
Me from doing what I wanted to. I mean, because this is what I feel like I'm meant to do. This is, I love doing this.
Sure.
But, it was a lot of people, it was hard for people to actually, like, see, listen of my age, It was.
Right. Well, I guess in some ways that almost brings me to the flip side of that question. Like, looking back a little bit, were there some instances at the beginning, or early on at least, where being a 12-year-old made it perhaps easier, meaning that people were, once they did find out a little bit about you, that they were impressed with your passion, obviously, your focus, commitment, and decided to help you in some ways because you had all these things going and you were 12?
I mean, again, when I was younger, it was more of a shock factor to hear about that, but I'm actually kind of glad that I am, 15 now, because again, I am able to do much more than I was previously. Like, when people now hear about me, they think, okay, well, he's 15, it's kind of hard to believe, but it's not as hard to believe as if you were 12.
Yeah, I gotcha.
But I mean, one of the biggest things, and that's not to discourage anybody, I mean, no matter what age you are, you should do whatever your heart tells you to do. You should do whatever your passion is. Because, that's the most important thing. If you are doing something because it's expected of you, or because it's expected of the age that you're in, then that's not right. You should do whatever you want to do, whatever you personally feel. If you feel something is right, do it. If you feel something is wrong, don't do it. I mean, and don't follow it. It's whatever you personally personally believe. I mean, age shouldn't determine that.
Well, coincidentally, and probably not the first or last time in this conversation, I mean, you're saying things that reflect you're obviously wise beyond your years. So again, in case people might have just tuned in now, this is Talk Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. And if you are just joining us, my guest is Thomas Ponce, founder and president of Lobby for Animals. He's been recognized by PETA and other national organizations for his work on behalf of animals and directly, of course, with his organization, Lobby for Animals. If you'd like to join the conversation, we invite you to do so by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. So we've gotten a couple of interesting emails so far, Thomas. One says, amazing work, young man. As a father of two, was there anything special your parents did raising you that you might recommend I do?
Well, first I want to say that thank you for the question. My parents are amazing and I love them to bits. One of the things they did was they read to me when I was very young. My mom would, you know, whenever I was tired, she'd come in my room. She would, you know, just she would read any book, you know. And one of the books that she read, and it was actually my favorite at the time, was called Turtle, Turtle, Watch Out. And it was just talking about why it's important to protect the turtle eggs that are on the beach to make sure that nobody harms them, nobody's doing anything that could misguide their path. So, I mean, if you want to, I would say recommend just read to your kids, and also don't sugarcoat anything for them, because that's the other important thing. I mean, I'm opposed to sugarcoating anything. You know, I think we should, if we're going to learn about something, it should be told, you know, blunt. People should get the exact information. You know, don't sugarcoat it for your kids just because, you know, if they're young. Because I mean, if it's sugarcoated, then it's not, you're not giving them the information that they need. You're not giving them the truth.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's the most important thing, in my opinion.
And so I take it there wasn't much sugarcoating going on in the Ponce household.
Oh, yeah, not at all.
Yeah. So, Thomas, let's circle back. We kind of touched on this, obviously, more broadly, but not everyone listening, you know, maybe is familiar with the virtues of lobbying. You know, why more specifically is it important? Why did it become important to you, and why now that you've spent this kind of time and compiled all this information and got the website up and running, why is it important?
Lobbying is, I mean, like I've said many of times, lobbying is the way to change the laws. It's the way to make the change that we want to see. And when we lobby, I mean, that's bridging the gap between us and our legislators. You know, a lot of people say, oh, well, you know, there's corporations that are in there. I mean, the thing is that the reason we see a lot of bad laws coming in, the reason that we see a lot of laws that we may not agree with, is because there's not enough people lobbying. The legislators are only hearing from those paid lobbyists by those organizations, those corporations. But if we get out, if we lobby, if we make our voice heard, if we express what we want our legislators to hear, then that'll bridge the gap. They'll actually see both sides of the coin instead of just the paid lobbyist or the side that is by the corporations that are paying lobbyists to go in and lobby for their cause.
So in other words, one important element is sort of offsetting the machinery that might be really strong in, on the other side of an issue that might not be, for example, in an animal's best interest or in the environment's best interest, but they have those high-priced, kind of steady lobbyists. So just having anything on the other side, grassroots or otherwise, people are coming through the Lobby for Animals website, helps at least, if it doesn't balance out that equation, it at least lets people know, hey, there are people who feel strongly on the other side.
Exactly. I mean, like I said, if, you know, corporations and different organizations, they may have the money, but we by far have the numbers. And if we actually get up and we, you know, show our legislators what we want to see, if we actually let them listen to us properly, then I mean, that can be amazing. That can cause so much change. I mean, it's incredible.
Well, this question that I was going to ask dovetails with one of the email questions. In fact, I'll read the email question first and then we'll go from there maybe. First of all, the subject line of the email says, great guest with the 3 exclamation marks. And then it says, what or who does Thomas feel is the biggest threat to animal welfare here in Florida?
Personally, personally, I feel like one of the biggest threats to animal welfare in Florida I would not be sure, but I would have to say one of the things that are threatening animals currently one specific animal in particular would be the bear hunt.
Yeah, well, let's talk a little bit about that. In fact, I mean, extremely timely, I guess, in the sense that the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission is today meeting to hear four proposals in East Point in the Panhandle and then decide kind of which direction to go. Now, what sort of lobbying would you recommend? I mean, here they're obviously hearing proposals today. They're going to make a decision soon. What would you do to lobby those members of that commission, for example? Maybe you're already doing things, but to kind of take us through, just since that's something you mentioned is kind of a key issue at the moment, and of course it's extremely timely. What would you do, and what would you recommend that those of us speaking to you and listening to you could do?
Honestly, I would say in the simplest of terms, voice your opinion. That's honestly the best thing that you can do. If you voice your opinion, it will be heard, in the simplest of terms.
And if, for example, is there on, of course, spent some time on the website, but I can't remember at the moment, is there information on the Lobby for Animals website about how to contact, for example, members of the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission about the bear hunt and about the decision that they'll be making shortly?
Is there info to contact Florida Fish and Wildlife on the website?
Yes.
Yes. Yes, there is.
I thought so. So again, people listening, they're listening online, they can go right now, even as they hear us talk, or later, when they have a moment to get to their computer, they could go to lobbyforanimals.org and find those contacts and send an email to one or more members. You know, the more the merrier, really, in this kind of case. And just, as you say, Thomas, voice your opinion. Just say, hey, we're opposed to the bear hunt. It's not a good idea. A lot of the people, of course, there's been protests and some key newspapers. The Tampa Bay Times weighed in on it, I think, Friday. And I think last week I reported that the Palm Beach Post over on my side of the state, all opposed to the bear hunt. So there's different information you can cite in your emails. I think typically the recommendation is to keep those kind of emails short and succinct. But voice your opinion, as you say, Thomas, to urge those people to forego the bear hunt altogether. So we have a little more time. Let's talk a little bit about other hats you wear at other organizations. For example, FinFree Florida. What is it and what do you do?
FinFree Florida, it's honestly a organization dedicated to the protection of sharks. I mean, there I am the, I guess, regional coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
FinFree, it's meant to protect sharks. I mean, I just wanted to expand on that for like a minute. I mean, the protection of sharks is very, very important. I mean, and organizations like this are very, very important because, I mean, sharks are stone predators, and a keystone predator is a predator that is very important to the ecosystem. If you remove a keystone predator, everything is going to fall. It's like a domino effect.
Sure.
And, I mean, my role, I guess, in FinFree Florida would be regional coordinator. I'm putting out as much information I can about the protection of sharks. I'm trying to educate as many people about their importance because, again, they are keystone predators.
And related to that, I think it's also part of the mission, if I'm not mistaken. There's a lot of emphasis on raising awareness about shark finning. Maybe you could talk for a minute or two about shark finning and how you try to get the word out about that.
Sure. Shark finning is essentially the collection of sharks and then removing their fins for sale and trade and use. It's horrible. It's a horrible thing. It's one of the worst. It's probably the worst thing that you can. I mean, it's one of the worst things that I've seen. You know, it's removing the fin of a shark and then throwing the finless shark back into the ocean to either drown, bleed to death, or get eaten by other fish. I mean, it's terrible. And in my opinion, the way to cut that off, the way to stop this, would be to cut off the trade, sale, and export. I mean, if there's no demand, there's no reason to supply.
Well, unfortunately, there's a huge international market for shark fins. And so, again, that comes back to our ongoing theme, of course, of lobbying and trying to shore up, as it were, legislation about shark finning. In this case, I think it was one of those where enforcement, given a lot more teeth and more enforcement, is critical.
Exactly. If there are much tighter regulation, if there's a ban completely on this, let's say a state ban or a federal ban, that, or I would say just the state ban would be probably the best. But if there is, let's say, a state ban on this, then this completely cuts out the, it completely cuts that state out of that process. You know, you're saying you will completely ban the sale, trade, and export of shark fins and shark fin product. You know, that will completely, that'll give no reason, especially in, let's say, a state like Florida, where, I mean, we're practically surrounded by ocean. That's a huge, I mean, part of that.
Absolutely. So we're sort of nearing the end of our time, Thomas, but I want to make sure we get a couple more key points in, including another organization that, you wear an important hat at is the Pollination Project. Maybe you could describe a little bit about what the Pollination Project is and then what role that you play there.
Sure. The Pollination Project is a seed grant organization. They give grants to people that are that want to make change in the world, that are they simply want to see change. And I mean, I cannot say enough good things about the Pollination Project. I mean, they are amazing. The people there are nice. They're friendly. They're very accepting of people. You know, it's they help organizations, but they help projects that people want to start, that they the people, you know, they feel passionate about, they want to make change. And the Pollination Project, they help them. They give people seed grants to start, you know, their projects, to kind of lift them off the ground.
Just to kind of give them a little boost, a little start, and then those people to kind of take flight with the help they've gotten from the Pollination Project.
Oh yeah. No, they help projects that are looking towards, like, the bigger picture.
No, that's great. So, Thomas, we are sort of in the tail moment or so now, but let me ask you this. When you're not working on Lobby for Animals or otherwise on behalf of the other organizations we just mentioned, Finfleet Florida, the Pollination Project, how do you like to spend your time? Are you a video game guy? Do you like music, movies? What are the non-animal welfare, non-Lobby for Animals things that you're interested in?
In my leisure, I try to get some writing done. I like writing, listening to, you know, music on occasion. And, you know, I mean, music in terms of, like, while I'm writing or
yeah.
Whenever I'm feeling, you know, relaxed, like I want to take a breather.
Sure.
I love spending time, you know, just at the home relaxing with my family and just going on the computer and Googling, I don't know, random things. As simple as that may sound, you know, finding different types of interesting facts through the use of Google is, I don't know, I find it fun.
Sure. And when it comes to animals, what would you like to do in the next few years? Just from speaking to you and just kind of the path you already traveled, I'm guessing there are some goals and some ideas about the next few years might hold for you or things that you'd like to pursue.
I honestly just want to make this world, you know, better for the animals and us. I want to make it better for, you know, I want to make it better for my kids. You know, obviously I'm not having kids anytime soon, but when that day comes, I want to make this world, you know, a good place for them. I want them to grow up in a world where there's not this type of cruelty going on, they don't need to worry like this, where they can just have a good life. You know, I want to make this better for my kids, grandkids. You know, I want to spread the idea of compassion. I want to spread this idea of, you know, compassion for all. You know, I want people to learn to be nice to each other, to not spread so much hate, to not spread so much just dislike towards, you know, other beings. You know, I want people to make that connection between, you know, what they do will affect everything. You know, the fact that one little action, big or small, is going to affect everything on a grander scale. You know, that everything stacks up. Everything has an equal and opposite reaction. You know, that we are all connected.
Wow. All right. Well, that is, I think, the perfect place to leave it, although I would ask you at your first opportunity to please send over your identification or birth certificate. I just want to double check that you're actually 15, because you are, once again, sounding well beyond your years, and there's a lot of great wisdom that all of us, I think, can put to good use there. So, Thomas, thank you very much for joining us. We've been speaking with Thomas Ponce. Again, his organization is Lobby for Animals. The website is lobbyforanimals.org. There's also a Facebook page. You can just search for Lobby for Animals on Facebook. And, Thomas, keep up the good work, and we will keep track of all your great efforts and successes, and I'm sure we'll talk again on the show sometime down the road.
Thank you for having me here. I also wanted to mention, if anybody has any questions that they want to contact me, they can also look my name up on Facebook. Just type in Thomas Ponce and my name should come up. But definitely feel free to ask me any questions. I'm available whenever anybody needs.
That's great. Thank you again, Thomas.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
All right. Take care now. In a moment, I'll have a brief conversation with Alex Blount, who joined by a robotic elephant named Ellie, is touring, giving presentations to schools and summer camps about the plight of performing elephants, including a stop on Friday in St. Petersburg and elsewhere in Florida in the coming days. Right now, it's time to step into the Comedy Corner. This is one portion of a piece called Farming 101 by Drew Hastings in today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
I lived out there for a month before I figured out that red stick on my mailbox wasn't a country 911 system. It is not easy. I'm going to make it work. I don't give a... Livestock, that's my dream. Livestock, man. But I'll tell you what, people think it's easy. You read up on it and it's... No. My first deal, I got ripped off. I bought a herd of Black Angus hogs, right? I thought they looked short coming off the truck. Pygmy cattle my ass. I've tried growing crops, but you'd find more cornrows on an NFL team than I could pull off my land. So I called Mr. Grimes. He's the county ag agent for my county, you know, like the Mr. Kimball dude, right? And I call him. He comes out, you know, takes soil samples, talks to me extensively about my background. Well, he tells me the best thing for me to plant is a for sale sign in the front yard.
That was Drew Hastings with a portion of a piece called Farming 101, taken from his album Irked and Miffed. Now, to hear about the tour he's conducting alongside a robotic elephant named Ellie, let's welcome Alex Blount back to Talking Animals. Good morning, Alex.
Good morning, Duncan. How are you?
I'm very good. Some listeners may recall that you were a guest on Talking Animals a year ago, almost to the day, as it turns out. At that point, you were on a tour with the virtual reality orca experience. Tell us about the current tour.
So we have Ellie. She's our 6.5-foot tall robotic elephant, and we have been taking her around to elementary schools for about the past 10 months, and we're just trying to help kids think differently about animals. So Ellie tells a story of how she was in the circus and how when compassionate people stopped visiting the circus, she was able to go to a sanctuary where she's now happy and free.
And so one of the things I love about Ellie, among others, is that she talks, right? She's a talking animal, for Christ's sake. So, and so that's great. But, I mean, there's also all kinds of movements and stuff. Maybe you can describe that what all Ellie is capable of in those visits.
Yeah, so... Ellie's fully animatronic. She can move her head. She can move her trunk up and down. She can move her legs. And so she really looks and moves like a real elephant. And people can see video of her online if they go to petakids.com. And they'll see her, you know, moving, talking just like a real elephant would. So when she's telling her story, you know, the kids really have the feeling that they're hearing from an elephant what it was like to be in the circus, what it was like to be chained up every night and deprived of their family and everything that's natural to them.
And since you've been on this tour, obviously, for a number of months, describe some sort of typical reactions by these school kids. And now, of course, school's out. The tour continues into, like, summer camps and similar situations. But, like, what do the kids say or do after Ellie has kind of told her story or you've made your presentation?
So after Ellie talks, we generally will let the kids ask us questions. They're so curious about, you know, Ellie and her family. You know, a lot of the younger kids, even after we tell them that Ellie is a robot, they continue to believe that she's real. Some of them will even bring up sticks and leaves and kind of things like that as a snack for Ellie after the presentation. Kids just, they really love her, and kids are so naturally empathetic towards animals.
When you hear comments, I mean, what do they take from her story, you know, having been in a circus and now being in a sanctuary? What sort of impact does that seem to have?
Well, I think kids
naturally understand that elephants and all wild animals want to live in the wild. And a lot of them will come up and tell us that they went to the circus and they wish they hadn't, or that maybe their family is planning to go to the circus in the future. And now this is something new they've never heard before. And now they're saying, I don't think I want to go to the circus, because I understand that these animals, they want to be in the wild. They don't want to be chained up or traveling around the country in boxcars.
Yeah, very interesting. For a lot of the tour, it's been in elementary schools, as you mentioned, Alex, and now, obviously, with school out of session, it's camps. Now, I know that, we sort of spoke that with them being at camps, people who would hear about this can't necessarily bring their kids if they were inclined to do so. Are there any appearances in Florida coming up where people could bring their kids to kind of experience the Ellie talk, the whole presentation?
So right now we're really just planning on visiting the summer camp. So unfortunately, I don't know that there will be an appearance where Ellie will be able to appear publicly. That may come up, and if it does, I will let you know so you can let your listeners know.
Okay, fair enough. That's great. Boy, this is a lot of months. How many tour stops, how many schools have you visited, or how many presentations have you given thus far?
Well, we do about an average of 5 schools a week, and she's been going for 10 months. So
that's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot of schools. We've talked to over 20,000 kids total. We've spoken to a lot of people all across the country, and, everyone loves Ellie.
Yeah, no doubt. And how much longer does the tour continue? How many more weeks or months might you be out on the road?
So after this summer, Ellie will tour for a whole nother school year. So in the fall semester, she will be traveling to the Northeast. And then in the beginning of 2017, she'll go up to the Pacific Northwest. And so we're planning to try and hit the entire country with Ellie so that we can share her story, share the story of all the elephants and all animals in the circus.
And are you going to be part of that tour, though, as it continues that far?
That is to be determined. I'm not sure at this point.
Okay. Because, God knows that's a long tour and a lot of travel. And then, of course, as we mentioned earlier, you were on a comparable tour with the whole Orca virtual reality experience. So I don't know if you experienced any road burn at any point, but it seems like you've been out there for quite some time.
Yeah, I've been touring for about a year now. I enjoy it a lot, though, so I'm not sure what the future has in store for me.
I gotcha. Well, cool, Alex. Well, thank you so much for joining us and for doing all this good work. Sounds like it's really getting some important messages through to kids at sort of a pivotal time, and they love Ellie, and I was lucky enough to meet Ellie over the weekend, and, I could see why you would. I kind of love Ellie myself. So, all right, Alex, thank you so much, and we'll speak to you perhaps on the next tour, whatever that might be.
Yeah, that would be great. Thanks, Dustin.
Okay, thank you. Coming up at 11 on WNF, it's Rob Lori and Radioactivity rolling into the noon hour. It constitutes a full 2 hours of interviews, phone calls, news, and more with contributions from members of the stellar WNF staff, including, of course, Everyday Ethics with Craig Kopp. Meanwhile, as the prize for Name That Animal Tune, we'll be offering a Talking Animals t-shirt. Right now, it's time for a little bit of animal news and announcements. Again, as we touched on with Thomas, I don't think anything's more pertinent in Florida at the moment than the bear hunt. And as Thomas and I did discuss, the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission is meeting today to hear 4 different proposals on how the bear hunt would play out. Of course, one of those scenarios is that there wouldn't be one at all. So urge you to take Thomas's advice to voice your opinion. Reach out in one way or another to the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission. And again, there are contact information to be found for that body on Thomas's website, lobbyforanimals.org. Another thing real quick I saw last night, it's really been making the rounds this morning online, just underscores, I don't know if anyone else feels that the Olympics seem to be a little bit doomed before we get underway, but I just want to briefly read this pertinent story for Talking Animals. A jaguar featured at an Olympic torch ceremony was shot dead by a soldier shortly after the event in the Brazilian Amazon city of Manaus, as the animal escaped from its handlers, an army statement said, from Reuters, by the way. The jaguar was killed on Monday at a zoo attached to a military training center when a soldier fired a single pistol shot after the animal, despite being tranquilized, approached the soldier, the army said. We made a mistake in permitting the Olympic torch, a symbol of peace and unity, to be exhibited alongside a chained wild animal. This image goes against our beliefs and our values. The local organizing committee, Rio 2016, said in a statement, and we guarantee there will be no more such incidents at Rio 2016. Ugh. All right. So many problematic things about that report. I don't really know where to begin. But anyways, I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. This is a giveaway. But please only participate if you haven't won something from WMF in the last 90 days. There'll be a prize, a Talking Animals t-shirt, to the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song, inspired, of course, in part at least, by Ellie. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals. All right, we'll take those guesses off the air. They are pouring in, not surprisingly, perhaps. We have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals. And it's WMNF, Tampa.